Disability services can sometimes be a very white middle-class service system. Because of the work that we do with people in poverty, when solutions are being recommended, we're the ones at the table raising our hand and saying, what about people in poverty? When we're in the poverty space, people are talking about solutions and we're the ones raising our hands to say, what about people with disabilities? Because that is the single highest concentrated demographic group in our country. I think that's important. I think we need more organizations that have a deeper understanding of multiple service systems versus a narrow focus.
Hi, I'm Kendra Davenport, President and CEO of Easter Seals, and you're listening to On Board with Transparent Leadership, an Easter Seals podcast where I speak with leaders from some of the country's top organizations. Together, we explore how transparent leadership can impact communication, trust building, and foster a culture of openness and accountability. And today, you know, I am joined by Pam Green, President and CEO of Easter Seals Redwood. And I will just say, I think Pam's been with Redwood about 20 years. But before that, she was a CEO in a Fortune 500 company. So tell us a little bit about yourself first, Pam, because I just love you. And I've only known you for 2 years since I've been at Easter Seals. But you were one of the most, I have to say, one of the warmest CEOs I met, and I met you at the summit, which was about 6 months into this role for me, and you couldn't have been more welcoming. You're just an outgoing, gregarious person, and I'm so glad you're talking with us today. But tell us a little bit about you, and then if you could go into Easter Seals Redwood and your role there.
Sure. So I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I started my career, I did an internship in college for Kelly Services, the staffing company, and was fortunate enough to be offered a position, stayed with Kelly for a number of years, lived all across the country in different cities, and I was one of those folks that when September 11th happened, I said, maybe time to make a career change. I may not want to be traveling all the time. So took a little bit of time off. And with my children, and I decided when I came back to work, I wanted to work in a purpose-driven business. And I was so fortunate that the first person that I spoke with was my predecessor here at Easter Seals Redwood. And I told my husband, I was in our legal recruiting arm. So I spent a lot of time negotiating offers and those types of things. And I told my husband after the second time I met Lisa, said, the only thing crazier than the fact that she offered me the job on the spot was that I accepted it on the spot. And that was 21 years ago. And so I've never looked back. I absolutely love this organization and everything that we do. I did not have a lot of personal connection to disability when I joined the organization. But since then, I have benefited from learning from people with disabilities and really having a front row seat around what inclusion really looks like. So Easter Seals Redwood is about a $30 million organization. We are in two states. We are in Northern Kentucky and Southwest Ohio. We have about 450 employees. And our services range from prescribed pediatric medical child care all the way to employment services. We operate two social enterprise businesses and a variety of opportunities to ensure people have the opportunity to live a full and meaningful life.
Thank you. Thank you. I had the great opportunity to visit Easter Seals Redwood not so long ago, and I was impressed by the scope and scale of the operation, what you just described. Everything from little babies that are essentially medically fragile to a workforce development. What do you call that? Your center? Do you call it a warehouse? Do you call it the center? Because it's enormous.
Yeah, and it's
can a. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I just found that so moving, and it was a beehive of activity, and I think people would really enjoy hearing about what goes on there and how you're expanding right next door.
Absolutely. So our packaging and fulfillment center is a key part of our workforce development efforts. So like many nonprofit organizations that serve people with disabilities, we were founded as a sheltered workshop in the 70s by a group of parents who wanted to ensure that their kids had opportunities to work. And it was a wonderful solution for a long period of time, but the world changed and we decided we needed to change too, and that we weren't really preparing people for employment if they only spent their day with people with disabilities. If what we really want is for folks to integrate into the community, that needs to start in our services. And so in 2017, we decided to convert from a sheltered workshop to a social enterprise. We employ people with disabilities, we employ veterans, and we employ people who are economically disadvantaged in our community. So as you know, Kendra, when you walk in, there's just this incredible energy. I'm so proud of what we've done. And I think I said in an op-ed recently in our business career, like, you come to Easter Seals, if you're worried about what inclusion looks like for your business, come see what it looks like here. Because more than 25% of our workforce has a disability diagnosis, and we're growing by, I think, an average of 15% per year. So it's a remarkable place.
It is. And you're absolutely right about the energy. I was very, very moved. Right next door to it, you are building something else. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I was equally moved by that and how it dovetails into serving the populations you employ.
Yeah. So we're in the middle, as you know, it's a $30 million campaign to significantly renovate our facility to become a regional impact center. And so we've expanded the packaging and fulfillment center by over 50%. Another piece that we are incredibly excited about is we are opening a military and veteran service center in our building. We've operated a veteran employment program for more than a decade. And this center will be a hub. We're going to have a gaming room. We're going to have a workout facility. We have lockers for the homeless veterans that we serve. We have a computer learning lab. We have space for partners to come in. The VA will have regular office hours there to help our folks connect to benefits. We have an employee whose job is to help folks navigate the VA benefits system. And so at Easter Seals Redwood, I think we're committed to two things. And the first is never charging any veteran a fee for any of the work that we do. And the second is serving any veteran regardless of discharge status. Because, you know, a lot of people join the military when they're young, and we all make mistakes. And so we feel like a person who is signed up to put their life on the line for their country shouldn't be penalized if they've made a mistake. That's actually when we need to be there most to lift them up.
I couldn't agree more. So tell, before we go to you, because I have a lot of questions for you personally, but I want to ask one more about Easter Seals Redwood, because it is an affiliate that has a number of service lines, and you've described them so well. But is there something that people are most surprised to learn about Easter Seals Redwood that you're always eager or eager right now to share with our listeners?
Yeah. I think people are quite frankly, the very thing that you've just said, people are always surprised by the scope of the work that we do. And I think a piece of it is that we view ourselves as sitting at the intersection of a lot of different systems. And we talk at Easter Seals Redwood all the time about systems change. What are we doing to make the world better, not just for the individual, but for the way it functions? And so when we serve a family, we find, quite frankly, that a lot of the people that we serve with disabilities can't work because they are unable to secure employment because they have so many medical visits to go to. So maybe we can offer them a position in our packaging and fulfillment center to help stabilize their lives with a flexible work schedule. You know, we do a lot of work with disadvantaged youth, many of whom have undiagnosed learning disabilities. And how can we help them get skills? We do a lot in the construction training space to help folks connect to careers that lead to the middle class. And so I think there was a study years ago by Bridgespan, and one of the things that they found was that single issue causes, I'll use a health, like American Heart Association, for example, that it is easy for people to understand the work that they do. And they are excellent in working within service systems, but it's actually multi-system agencies that have driven the greatest social change. And we view ourselves as being right there. You know, disability services can sometimes be a very white middle-class service systems. Because of the work that we do with people in poverty, when solutions are being recommended, we're the ones at the table raising our hand and saying, what about people in poverty? When we're in the poverty space, people are talking about solutions and we're the ones raising our hands to say, what about people with disabilities? Because that is the single highest concentrated demographic group in our country. And so I think that's important. I think we need more organizations that have a deeper understanding of multiple service systems versus a narrow focus.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more, because as you know, at the national level, explaining every day mm-hmm. to people in the corporate community or on Capitol Hill what we do is a challenge. And we've been around for more than 100 years, but you articulated it so well. I think we do so much across 70 affiliates, and every affiliate is different. So thanks for going into mm-hmm. that. That kind of teed me up for something I thought when I visited you guys and you gave me the tour, and I actually found it a little daunting, the size, the scale, the scope, the age range of the people you serve. And I remember thinking after that first day, and it was a long day, but I got back to my hotel and I thought, that is an awesome responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you seem to carry everything in stride. You're very even keeled. You're very happy. Your team, culture you've fostered, is very happy. So can you tell me a little bit about how do you compartmentalize things? Mm-hmm. Have you just over time gotten to a point where it isn't super stressful all the time? What's the secret, Pam? Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things that I love about being at Easter Seals is that our work puts it in perspective every day. You know, I was interviewing someone for a job one time, and I mean, I was interviewing a candidate, and unfortunately for him, I knew immediately he was not going to be the person that I was going to hire. So I will be honest, I'd sort of checked out a little, and he asked me, you know, a standard question: what do you like about working here? And it really caught me off guard. And I started talking about how being at Easter Seals keeps you from taking work for granted. That, like, we can all get up in the morning and gripe and complain, and it's Monday, I don't want to go in. But for the people that we serve, regardless of what label they walk through the door with, work is like a puzzle they're trying to unlock. A lot of them have cycled through a bunch of different jobs. They don't know why they're not succeeding. A lot of them have barriers in their life that prevent them from succeeding, whether it is a cognitive delay or a criminal record. And when you see people who want so desperately to succeed at the world of work, it changes how you feel about your own work. And it really does help you to keep in perspective that what we are doing helps people provide for their families. It helps them connect to a social network. And I know it's maybe a little hokey, but it is. It's the mission that, and everybody on our team is committed to that. And so I think that's the other thing about, like, what makes it easy is when you work with amazing people.
I love that. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, you and I, you're younger than me, I'm pretty sure, by a lot. So you and I have been at this a long time. And I think we've both gotten to a point where we genuinely enjoy what we do. But to your point, I could not agree more. The mission makes the not so great parts of our jobs, you know, palatable, and an appreciation for how fortunate we are to have the roles we do. But if you were going to speak to someone who was early on in their career, mm-hmm. let's make it a woman, right? Uh-huh. Because I think you know how I feel. No offense, guys, but I think women are juggling a lot more than men mm-hmm. on any given day. Yeah. So if you were going to talk to a younger version of yourself or someone who's just entering the career, what would be the advice you would give them?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a great question, Kendra. I think, you know, I think there's this awful. I would dispel this myth that, you know, find your passion and you'll never work a day in your life. That is not true. I mean, 5% of the people in the world know what their passion is. So if the rest of us are sitting on the sidelines trying to find our passion before we dig in and do it, you know, I tell my own children this, like, it will find you. I was an English major when I was in college, and
ditto. This is why we get along so well.
It is. This is not the future that if somebody had said, you know, what do you want to do? I would have never said, I want to be the CEO of Easter Seals.
What'd you want to be in college?
You know, I wanted to teach, of course. I wanted to get my PhD and teach linguistics. That'd be a linguistics professor. So anyway, but that sounded like a lot of work from an academic perspective. And I like people. Was. I like people too much to live in the world of the mind. And so I think that's the one thing that I'd say is that there is good work to be done. And I had a mentor one time that said, even if you've decided you hate your job, make sure that you're taking the opportunity to learn what you need to for the job you want. And I was in a position at that time that I really didn't like. And then I was like, oh, well, you know, the position I really want is this. So what do I need to do now to prepare me for what I want? And I think that is another key thing for me. You know, I will tell you, Kendra, the young women that I see right now are absolutely amazing. Like, they don't stand for the crap that I had to. I am so in awe of Gen Z and what they're bringing to the workforce. I think a lot of people bellyache about them. That has not been my experience. Both the young women and the young men, I think they're much more committed to an inclusive world. And that includes gender, it includes sexual orientation, it includes disability status, it includes mental health. I mean, there's amazing stuff going on in the world right now.
Yeah. You and I think talked about this a little bit one time. I think when I was out visiting you, I think young people today, and I feel so old when I say that, like I'm ancient young people, but I think of my own children who are all in their 20s, all three of them, they are so much more aware, socially conscious, just conscious of what's going on in our world and how they fit in. And I think that makes for really interesting employees. And yeah, I do love that there is a greater sense, I think, in our workplace of work life, home life balance. Because I'm sure you'd agree. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you wouldn't. But when I was in my 30s, I worked. I kept my head down. I did whatever I was asked, even if I went home saying, that was so inappropriate. I shouldn't have had to do that. I shouldn't have had to get my boss's dry cleaning, which I did, you know, with my own money. You know, I got paid for it, but still, you know, my girls would never tolerate that. So I think that's a benefit. But talk a little bit, if you can, because I think we've been privy to tremendous change in the workforce since you and I probably started our careers. And one of the things I think is to me the most fascinating is, and it was brought about by COVID, is this hybrid work we're doing now. I don't want to put you on the spot to tell me where you stand, but yeah, go ahead. Tell me where you stand on that and how you're mitigating it, because I have to say it's one of the biggest benefits, I think, but it's also one of the biggest challenges as a manager. What do you think?
I could not agree more. I'll go back to during COVID with our packaging and fulfillment center, we build test kits for clinical trials. So our customers' biggest customer was Pfizer. So we never closed during the pandemic. We were there every day building test kits for the vaccine trials. And so there was something about that experience that, you know, the thing that we said to our employees in that moment was, if you have the privilege of being able to work from home, you have to do so right now. because we're on the front lines of this right now, and we have to do everything that we can to protect those people. We had folks that were in our day programs that were closed that actually volunteered. I mean, they were paid, don't get me wrong, but they volunteered to subcontract with our partners in residential services because the residential centers didn't have staffing during the day because they were used to folks being in day programs. So this COVID with our team was really a, we're staying homes because you can't, and we're going to make sure that we're not there. Interestingly enough, pre-vaccine, I think after the vaccine, we all got COVID, but pre-vaccine, the only employees that we had that contracted COVID were people who were working from home. Our people who came into the office every day all stayed safe. So that was just an interesting
the irony.
It is. But when you think about like, so here we are, you know, all these years later, and we continue to embrace a hybrid work style. And what we're starting to see, we also had this added complication because with the renovations that are happening in our building, people don't have an office to go to. Yeah. And so the part about that that's been awesome is we've started to see how much people miss it. And so some people want to be in the office. But I've always led with a philosophy that if you treat people like adults, the majority act like adults. And we've tried to lead it that way. And so far, so good. So far, so good.
I love that. I am a morning person. I get up super, super early, mm-hmm. and I get some of my best work done in the first half of the day. Mm-hmm. When do you do your best work? And what do you feel personally about hybrid? Do you like being in the office? I mean, as a leader, you need to be in the office yeah. an awful lot. But if you yeah. could work from home, would you prefer it? Or do you prefer being around people? I think yeah. I know the answer, but.
Yeah. So I am the yin to your yang. I am an evening person. And so like I hit my most productive hour, like at 3 o'clock, and from 3 till 8, I am cranking. That is like when I go, and so I feel like that's when I do my best. It was interesting, you know, in the past when I needed to do like thinking work, I would say I'm going to work from home today to get that done. During COVID, right, I was home every day, and I started losing that sense of, okay, home provides clarity for work. And so I started saying, okay, I've got a lot to do a lot of thinking today. I'm going to go into my office and, you know, again, because I had to limit my exposure and shut the door. And so I'm a hybrid person. I really am. There are days I love being in the office. I need that energy. There are days when just the physical surroundings of work when I'm working on a project kind of spur my creativity. And then there are days when I'm like, I just need to be uninterrupted at home. And so maybe that's one of the reasons I'm so flexible about it with my team, is because I see that for me, having the best of both worlds, I feel like has made me a better employee. And I hope that it does for my team as well.
What do you do to replenish? What do you do to replenish your energy, your spirit, your headspace, because you're in a really demanding role mm-hmm. with an awesome amount of responsibility on your shoulders every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. You know, they say all that extroverted introvert stuff and all of that. I'm as I've aged, I've gotten to be a little bit more of that. Like, I love being around people, but when I come home, my husband is the biggest introvert that ever lived, and I am so grateful because he doesn't expect me to come home and talk to him. And so I really do kind of like recharge just when I'm not around people. I love to read. I love to learn. And my friendships, quite frankly, are really important to me. And so I think that when you're in leadership, it's, you know, leadership is lonely, right? I don't have a colleague in my office. And so having people that you can turn to recharge you that way is really important.
Do you have, I know you've mentioned it in the past, and I think you mentioned it just in your comments in the past few minutes. You mentioned a mentor. Is there someone or someones that you go to when you're stymied, when something's really troubling you, or when you just want some affirmation and some, you know, support and maybe somebody to tell you, yeah, you're doing the right thing?
Yeah, yeah, that's great. I think I have a ton of people that mentor me, quite frankly. I mentioned Lisa, who was my predecessor at Easter Seals, and Lisa has, we are so lucky. We congratulate ourselves all the time on the smoothness of our transition. And I know very few nonprofit leaders, or in any field, quite frankly, not just nonprofits, where there's been that sort of supportive handoff. And I was really lucky at the time that I became CEO. We were going through a merger with another organization, and their CEO, Peter, could not be more different than Lisa. And he was by my side, and he showed me, he stayed on to help lead the transition. And I so admired the way Peter allowed me my space and, you know, would give me his opinion when I asked for it. And that was exactly what I needed in that time as a new leader. And then, quite frankly, the other mentors that I've had have been, I have been so blessed to have had the most amazing board chairs. And I've had board chairs who really have respected that I'm running a great big organization and I've got a lot of pressure. And so they have viewed their role as, how can we ensure that you're successful? And they've really lifted me up. Even, I mean, you know, we've had, I talked about, you know, the transition from a sheltered workshop to a social enterprise, I make it sound really smooth. We lost over $1 million when we did it. It jeopardized the agency's reserves. It was brutal. And I couldn't have done it without my board chair saying, you know what, you're going to lift yourself up. We know we're doing the right thing. We'll get through this. And I think Peter, Lisa, my board chairs, they have all been just great.
Thank you for that. And you're lucky. You're lucky.
Very.
But I think good recognizes good. So I'm sure they benefit from knowing you and working with you as much as you do them. You've talked about your husband. I had the pleasure of meeting him. He has what I think is an absolutely fascinating job. But I also think, as an introvert, I'm married to one. He's an extroverted introvert. I force him to be that way. But I think it's tricky to be married to someone who is out front and on all the time. Mm-hmm. You talk a little bit about that balance, because I think that goes to mental health and well-being. If you have a partner who is supportive, that's wonderful. But maintaining that balance can be really challenging. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my husband and I were college sweethearts. So we've been together for 110 years now. But after, you know, we date a couple of years after college, we broke up for 2 years. And I think it was during that time that we both really assessed what we want out of a relationship. And at that time, you know, I was growing at Kelly Services. You know, I was the youngest person in this position and very ambitious. And I think we recognize the balance that we bring to each other. And my husband is, he's selfless, but really just one of the strongest people in the history of the world. Like, I'm like, you know, I get a little worked up and crazy. And, you know, my husband is like, hey, you know, it'll pass. Which, in the heat of a moment, if what I'm going wah about is something he's done, him telling me that it will pass makes me want to, you know, like throat punch him, especially when it turns out he's right. You know, I mean, this is not a divorceable offense. And so I think that having a strong partner by your side sure makes life so much easier. Because, you know, the times in my life when it's been the toughest, you know, a lot of times your work life is great, And, you know, I mean, we've been married 30 years. It's not all roses and sunshine, right? There are times when, you know, we are so on each other's nerves. And sometimes when that happens, you know, work is great. So I've got the energy to deal with home. And then other times home is fantastic and work is killing me. And so it really does kind of start to balance things out. It's those moments when they're both out of whack that you really appreciate.
Truer words.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities. You and I will have to have dinner. Go over this. And thanks for your candor on that. I think it's tricky because that's one of the questions I'm asked by younger employees. You know, how do you do it? How do you, you know, how do women do it? How do you have it all? And a lot of people believe you can't. I'm of a mind that you just described it so well. And I think I relate to that. You know, you can't have it all be perfect at all the time. And I think there's a resilience, you know, to working that helps aid and abet when things at home aren't maybe the greatest or vice versa, when things at work are challenging. But striking that balance is really, can be really tricky. So kudos.
Thank you too.
Thanks. Talk about, if you can, is there something you need to work? Is there a tool you rely on? I don't care what it is. Is there something you think of like, I can't leave the house without this, or I can't get along without this. This helps me do my job. It can be anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. Aaron, my husband always says, you know, Kendra, you're flying so fast. You can't even see the ground. You got to slow down. Because I do things like, I just on the way into the office today had to pick up a new pair of very expensive glasses because I left the last pair on an airplane, you know? And so when I leave the house to get on the plane, Aaron often drives me and will say, do you have your phone? Do you have your glasses? Do you have your keys? Yep. Do you have your other keys? Do you have this? And it is almost childlike and we laugh about it now, but I will admit, you know, 50 to 75% of the time I have to go back in the house. Or what typically happens, Aaron goes back in and says, I will get it. Sit here and calm down. So I'm talking about little tiny tools, but maybe there's something else you need or use that gets you through your day or helps you do your job.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's different. I mean, of course, my husband, because he also retrieves my glasses and that I regularly, my credit cards that I leave in restaurants. I could go on and on. I think it's a sign of genius, though, by the way, absent-mindedness.
But anyway, I'm going to take that.
I'm sure that's what it is. But I think, you know, when I get stuck at work, it sounds so pompous. But you're going to laugh. Like the Harvard Business Review gets me through my day sometimes. Like when I've got like decision stagnation, fatigue. I'm stuck on where to go. I honestly don't know that I've ever gotten like, here's the answer that I'm looking for, but just getting my head out of the weeds and trying to think a little bigger. And also, I think one of the things that's great is, you know, those things are never written about nonprofits. And so trying to think about what does this mean in my world, and hearing what business leaders think about the people that I serve, you know, it's really something that I feel like is a great mind tool for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I quote it and I put links to HBR articles all the time in my daily messages to my team, because I just think it's so practical. I don't think it sounds pompous, because I think HBR is written for people in the for-profit industry, but I think the line between for-profit and nonprofit started to blur about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I would say, and I'm biased, you know, I've never done anything but work in nonprofit, but I think it's much harder to work in a nonprofit today. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit, if you can, about leadership in general. What do you think is and I don't care, it can be nonprofit, can be for-profit, but really at the macro level, if you think of leading a team the way you do, managing projects, managing your budget, managing for growth. What's the biggest challenge to leaders? I don't necessarily mean in your job, but when you mm-hmm. think about leadership, what do you think is the biggest, one of the biggest challenges facing mm-hmm. leaders today?
The pace of change is constant. It is absolutely constant. And staying on top of that as a leader is really tough. And thinking what does this mean, not just, you know, this year, but what's this going to look like in 10 years? You know, I mean, assistive technology and what the impacts are for people with disabilities. Remote work and how that has opened up so many opportunities for people with disabilities. And so when I think about leadership, it's, I am one of those like leaders that has like, I don't know, 92 ideas a minute. And so that can be exhausting for the people that work with me. And so it's making sure as a leader that you feed the creativity and spirit of innovation in your team without exhausting them. I would say that is one of the real challenges right now. If you're that type of leader, and you know, there's so many different types of leaders. But I think that's one of the greatest is keeping up with change and not wearing people out, because I can come up with the ideas, but they're the ones that have to make them happen. And so, yeah, shut up, Pam.
What is the best compliment you've ever received?
Oh my gosh, that's a great one. I think that it has been the, you know, I have a daughter with type 1 diabetes, and she's struggled a great deal. And, you know, she was diagnosed as a teenager. So right when she's trying to be independent, her dad and I are having to insert our lives and manage her in a way that she was very resistant to. And so I think one of the nicest compliments that I've ever gotten is has been when one of my daughters has told me that they admire me.
Oh, you're getting me emotional. I totally relate to that. Totally so relate true. To that.
Because boy, most of the time they don't when they're teenagers, right? Oh, so when no. they finally say it, you're like, oh.
That's so true. Even in their early 20s, some days I feel like, I don't know how I got this far with all this advice. You know, this is really, thanks so, so much.
Exactly.
Okay. You made one major career transition, and mm-hmm. look how wonderfully it turned mm-hmm. out. What do you see on the horizon? What's next for you, if mm-hmm. anything, or is it just more of the same? And I know yeah. I'm putting you on the spot, but you can talk.
Oh yeah, you know, absolutely.
Broad strokes about it.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing, because I had zero intention of staying here as long as I have. I've been here for 21 years. And I will tell you, I think people can stay in a job too long. And I hope I am able to recognize if and when that happens. I tell my board all the time, if I find a job I want to do more, I'm going to do it. But I'm not out there looking. And I do love this work. Even though I'm still at the same organization, the job I'm doing right now is so different from the job that I was doing 10 years ago when I was the CEO. We're a different place. The world has changed for the people that we serve. I have great, new, young, diverse leaders. And so I think that, you know, I hope Lisa listens to this. She'll say it's the nicest compliment I hope that she's received. But when I first started, at Easter Seals, my, you know, the branches that I led at Kelly, we had won the Baldrige Award in Texas. And so I was kind of full of myself, and I thought that I was going to come in and teach this little nonprofit how to do things. And, I was, like you said, nonprofits are so complex. And Lisa was so smart, And I just thought, wow. And you know, she'd been here, when she retired, she'd been here 33 years. And I'd say she was, you know, as fresh the day she left as she was the day she started. So I don't know that I want to be here 33 years, but I hope that I can still be that leader. You know, we're going through this. My board members tease me, you know, like we've lived in the salad days. And now we're going to get through this campaign and this renovation. And I'm just so proud to have put the organization in place in the position that it's in.
As you should be, Anything on your bucket list that you haven't done, either personally or professionally, that you think, yeah, I got to do that. I got to make time to do that. I got to make time to go to this place or that place or.
Yeah, that's great. This is kind of a weird one, I think. My last board chair, Jim, he's amazing. And Jim's real woo-woo, you know, he's an entrepreneur and you name it, he's done it, in terms of, self-exploration. And, Jim shared a lot about a silent retreat that he did. And quite frankly, for an extrovert like me that has to talk all the time,
like no talking on the
no
retreat,
talking, nothing. No one around, no technology. And, I just feel sometimes like you said, you know, you're just flying. And the thought of just sitting with me for a couple of days, sounds really good. It's something I'd like to do.
Wow.
I know.
I
don't know if I'm strong enough. He said it's
making me
harder
think
than you
it's think. Making me uncomfortable just thinking about it. That's how much I talk.
I'm surprised how many people say that actually, because I'm like, oh, that sounds so good. And a lot of people are like, oh no. No way.
I love that. I love that. Is there anything you haven't shared about your job, your role, Easter Seals, that you want to share?
I don't know. It's specific to Easter Seals. It's a moment that I had actually, you know, you get these amazing moments all the time in our work. And I had something that happened a couple of weeks ago that just really it's stuck with me so much. And you know, I call donors to say thank you, and it's hilarious. You know, I say hey, I'm Pam from Easter Seals, and you can just hear like, oh crap, it's a telemarketer. And I'm like, no, yeah. I'm the CEO and I'm just calling to say thank you. And then it's a different conversation. But I asked this woman, you know, because we went through the merger, as you know Redwood was the merger is only about a year and a half old. And I said, you know, you've been giving to Redwood for a long time, and she'd increased the size of her gift. And I said, you know, can you share with me how long and why? And she said, well, actually, I can tell you exactly how long. It's been 23 years because that's when my son started preschool. And she said, my son's disabilities did not rise to the level of him being qualified for, you know, disability supports. He had a lot of speech delays, he had learning disabilities, and he came to Easter Seals Redwood and he got therapy. He had this inclusive environment where he was the middle of the pack instead of the slow kid. And he entered kindergarten at grade level. And she said, you know, he went on to graduate from high school with honors, graduated from college, got a great first job after college. And the day that I spoke with her, he had started his new job, which was as a shoe designer for a major footwear company. And she said, you know, I think about when his dad and I think about the trajectory of his life, like preschool was a real turning point. And I think back to those turning points in my life and like the people that there's almost always somebody that helped all of us. None of us got where we are by ourselves. And so I feel blessed to do this work every day. And the other thing that I love is that hearing the stories of the impact of giving, right? We all are besieged with requests all the time. And knowing the difference that the giving can make in a life, it does make you a citizen of the world. It gets you out of your thing when you think about, I'm going to help somebody else.
It does.
Service is important.
It's meaningful. It is meaningful. I had the pleasure of speaking to both of your boards at one of the events. I think it was one of the first events that you did jointly.
Yeah.
And I just want to, I think this is important. You know this because you've been so candid and so giving with all of the information about yourself and about your leadership style. I was sitting next to one of your board members and he brought his son. And his son was a little guy, like, I don't know, 9, 10, if that.
Yeah.
And he was so cute and I was so taken with him. And your board member leaned over to me and he said, you've got to bring them to things like this. And this was a sit down dinner with speakers. It was really not a child's event. And he said, so that they can learn how to behave and they can see you in action and learn from you, but learn from other people. And I said, oh, I couldn't agree more. And I just love having him here. And he said, well, Pam makes this possible. She's created the culture that makes this possible. And I think that's just one snippet of what was for me a very, very impactful visit. And you've heard me say a million times, I love spending time with affiliates, but I also really love meeting people like you because I think I draw on your energy and you are just, you're something else. So at the end of Ask Me, I'm sorry, at the end of these podcasts, we like to do this segment, part of it called Ask Me Anything. So stick around for that. But before we do, I want to ask you one final question.
Okay.
People who know me know I read. I'm a voracious reader and I don't sleep. Although I'm trying, I'm really working on sleeping better. I think I'll be better to everyone around me if I get a little more sleep. But I do read a lot and I read everything. I read everything from romance to biographies to self-help to a lot of political books lately and biographies. I'm big on biographies. And I also read a lot about work. Do you read? And if you do, I mean, read for pleasure, read outside of work. And if you do, is there something you can share, some book you can share with our listeners that you really resonated with you or that you're reading right now?
Yeah, so my favorite author of all time is Margaret Atwood. And so everyone thinks of The Handmaid's Tale, and I love The Handmaid's Tale. It's a wonderful book.
It's the first book that came to mind.
Exactly. But she has written so many wonderful things. And she actually has a trilogy called Oryx, the Mad Adam trilogy. Oryx and Crake is the first novel in it. And it was one of those books that when I read it, I thought, oh, that's pretty good. But like I found myself thinking about it and so much that came out of it. And so because it really causes us to think about the future and technology and food production. And I mean, just so many things. So I think I am I'm very drawn to fiction versus nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And if she wrote it, I'll read it.
I love that. Pam Green, thank you. Thank you so much for your time, your candor, your energy, everything you do. This was just a real pleasure. Appreciate you. And now on to Ask Me Anything. The question I get asked an awful lot is whether or not I have mentors in my professional life and what advice I would give someone searching for a mentor. And I have to say, I don't know where I'd be without mentors. I use mentors, a myriad of them, all the time. And they include my dad, who's 83. I go to him for certain things. My husband, from whom I've learned an awful lot about leadership and management. I think he has a very even hand and a very pragmatic way of managing. And he had a really stellar career in the military where management was a big part of what he did, and he managed a very diverse array of people, all ages and ethnicities and likes, dislikes, experience levels, and I think did it very gracefully and very meaningfully. So I look to him, but I also have had the great fortune of working with people throughout my 35-year career whose opinion I value and respect. and I go to them. I go to them as well. And we've all had people in our careers where if we've been working for them or worked alongside them, maybe at the time they weren't our favorite person. And I think those are the folks that we really can learn an awful lot from, because if you peel the onion back on what bugs you or irks you about someone, if you respect them, I mean, that has to be the leveler. You respect them, but they get under your skin from time to time. Typically, you know, those are things that you need to pay attention to. Maybe it's something that you don't consciously recognize as being something that you're lacking until you're confronted with it in someone else. I am thinking in particular of a boss I had where he made me laugh. I thought he was a good boss when I had him, but he would also really push me. And I can remember one instance where I secured a pretty significant gift. At the time, it was the biggest gift I'd ever secured. It was a $1 million commitment. And I thought I was just, I was the bee's knees, and I was expecting an awful lot of congratulatory adulation when I got back to the office. And I remember he was congratulatory, but not over the top. And I remember going back to my office, and I must have shown it. You know, I do wear my heart on my sleeve, because he came to my office before he left that day, and he said, "Hey, Davenport, you know, you did a great job. That was really good. But it's important to know that success has many fathers." And that stayed with me. It has stayed with me. And so whenever, you know, younger employees come to me and they are irritated or frustrated that they maybe didn't get the credit they felt they deserved, those words stay in my head. And I think, okay, well, where did this start? Who else was involved? Were you the only person? And I think a lot of the time, you know, when you flip things like that, you do recognize you couldn't have probably done it all on your own. And there were other people. And I think that kind of humility is hard won in today's world, where we're all on social media and we're vying for likes. And it's very, very tempting to focus or over-focus on the good, on the positive, on the things you really like, and not focus on the things you have to work on. I also have mentors that I just use to kick the tires. You know, tell me if this is crazy or not. Tell me if you don't agree with this. And I have another person who managed me for a very long time, and she is a very conservative manager. So I often go to her, this is going to sound crazy, when I know I'm right, but I want to just pressure test my response to something. And if she doesn't fall out where I think she's going to fall out, then that gives me some food for thought. If she's right where I thought she would be, you know, and will tell me, "Davenport, you're adding one too many, you know, sticks to the pile. You got to focus on what you got, and you're spreading yourself too thin," then I, you know, I feel like I'm right on course. But I think it's important because, you know, as someone I just spoke with said, leadership is lonely. You know, mentors, I think people tend to think very early on in your career, you need mentors to help you learn what you don't know, help you affirm what you know, but I would say that mentors are important at every stage in your career, and that I still, you know, 35 years into this career of mine, look to mentors for advice, guidance, support, affirmation, constructive criticism. So I think, where do you go to search for a mentor? I think they're all around you. I think mentors don't necessarily have to be someone who does exactly what you do, but rather someone whose opinion you respect, who is someone who comports themselves in a way that you value and that you recognize as a way you'd like to act and be. And they can be family members. You really just need to respect your mentors. You don't need to, I think, align professionally with them. They're invaluable. Go get a mentor. Easter Seals empowers people with disabilities and their families to be full and equal participants in their communities and within society. Easter Seals is where everyone can feel welcomed and people know that they aren't judged, but treated with the dignity that they deserve. Each day, we provide life-changing services nationwide and advocate for policies that improve quality of life. From employment to housing services to job training, child care and respite care, adult day programs, and so much more, Easter Seals is making a profound impact in thousands of communities every day. You can learn more by visiting easterseals.com. That concludes our episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, be sure to write a review, like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to join us in the next episode as we discuss how we can all get on board with transparent leadership.